Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we have a very critical mental health issue to talk about. This is World Suicide Prevention Day, and perhaps now, more than ever, we're forced to confront this delicate issue because of the pressures brought to bear on so many of us by the COVID-19 pandemic. Well, joining me to talk about this are Dr. Paulette Hubbard. She's a licensed clinical social worker, and Dr. Kelechi Fluitt, director of outreach for Howard University's counseling service. She's also a licensed psychology associate. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. And before I even get this conversation started, I wanted to share just a handful of resources right at the top of the program. And we'll talk about them, of course, later on during the program. And they will be on our website on WHUR.com after the program when the podcast is posted at 9 o'clock. For those of you who may need assistance, there is a 24/7 crisis hotline, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline Network. It's 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. Also, there is SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. It's part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. It can be found at samhsa.gov, and there are resources there to assist with suicide prevention. I want to thank both of you, Dr. Fluitt, and also Dr. Hubbard, for joining the conversation. We really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yes,
absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Also, I want to just share some information that I was able to find today. And this is coming from the CDC. And this is really kind of surprising to me. This information is, as far as statistics are concerned, it's really, really fresh, coming just in August of this year when it was released. And it says during late June, 40% of U.S. adults reported struggling with mental health or substance abuse, 31% suffering from anxiety and depression symptoms, 26% trauma and stressor-related disorder symptoms, and 11% seriously considered suicide. Are you surprised at hearing that, Dr. Hubbard?
No, not at all, especially since COVID happened back in March, and with all of the stay-at-homes across the board, therapists, psychologists, psychiatrists, LCSWs, we all saw a significant increase in a request for services from people suffering from anxiety, depression. We saw an increase in substance abuse, and we also saw an increase in domestic violence.
Mm. You know, Dr. Fluitt, there are no students on campus at Howard University, and more broadly, for a lot of colleges and universities, even though they may have tried to start because of the pandemic, they were forced to shut down and send a lot of students home. From your perspective as a mental health professional, are you seeing or hearing about, you know, more instances of what is known as suicide ideation, and particularly as it relates to young people right now?
Yeah, I think that it's important to really take a look or a survey of our world today, right? So we are definitely in the midst of a global pandemic, which is COVID-19. But in addition to that, we have other pandemics that are plaguing people of color, particularly Black people. So you have this racial injustice, the social injustice movements that are happening, the protests that is occurring. You also have racial divide that's occurring all over the world. You have loneliness, isolation, depression, even the average as it relates to unemployment. I think it was like 40 million. So if you look at the state of our world right now, there is a lot happening that's really contributing and impacting one's mental health. Even people who may have been considered, quote, mentally healthy prior to the pandemic may have experienced loss. So loss of someone due to COVID, death, unemployment, all of the racial injustices that are happening. So the compilation of everything that's happening in our world is really impacting one's mental health. And that's why we are seeing this increase in suicidal ideation, but also in suicidal risk, not only in adults, but in young people, in teenagers, in college age adults, because it's just so much happening and people don't always know where to turn for support.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about World Suicide Prevention Day, trying to address this critical mental health issue, particularly in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. I want to drill down a little bit more about younger people. Talk to me a little bit more about why this is particularly the case with teenagers or young adults, Dr. Fluid. You know, why are they particularly susceptible right now?
So I think one of the things is that young adulthood brings about a lot of transition that people face. And so as it relates to maybe transitioning from high school to college, from college to graduate school, just that age of 18 to 34 and all of the things that one may experience outside of the pandemic, outside of the social injustices, just the changes that happen even within their body, we are noticing that they need some additional support, whether it is upbringing, whether it is experience, whether it is just life circumstance. They find themselves in places where they need help, and they are not always, they don't always know the ways in which to reach out for help. And so even with this move of social media, you'll find a lot of young people going to their social media pages to express feelings of sadness, feelings of depression, feelings of anxiety, feelings of isolation, because this is the medium that they know to go to. So I think it's a combination of life transitions that is occurring. One of the things that I think we have to definitely talk about is family history and the impact that that plays in someone's mental health diagnosis or someone being more susceptible to mental health illnesses and concerns. And then on top of that, the not knowing, right? So there is an assumption sometimes within their own world that they should know how to get what they need, but they don't always have the resources or they don't always know who to tap into to get what they need.
That's an interesting point, Dr. Hubbard. Another aspect of the not knowing, those who may not have some of the mental health challenges that could lead to a suicide attempt. But those of us around those people, there are things that we may miss. Can you kind of run through some of the things that, if you are perhaps concerned about a loved one or a family member, that you should look out for?
Yes, and one of the other things that I want to add on to that is stigma, you know, the idea that it's not okay to seek help, even if you know you or a loved one needs services. We also need to start increasing awareness so that we can address that need for decreased stigma. But in addition to that, some of the warning signs and some of the telltale signs of someone that may be experiencing and a lot of times there's so many different avenues that can lead to suicide. But some of the thoughts that may come to mind are when they're talking about feeling hopeless or trapped or alone. And that's one of the reasons we've seen the increase, especially since COVID has happened, is because people are more isolated. You know, even with younger adults, they're more isolated and can't socialize, which is a protective factor. Saying that they have no reason to live, giving away personal possessions, sleeping too much or too little, their appetite changes in appetite, avoiding social interactions with others. Sometimes there's rage and anger, unexplained rage and anger, or just changes, dramatic mood swings may also be an indication. And something that we also don't often pay attention to when we see someone that's suffering from a mental health illness and potentially depression and having suicidal ideation. That's one of the things that I always screen for in my practice is the ideation of potential suicide risk. But one of the things that we don't always consider as a warning sign is when that individual has suffered from depression and potentially suicide ideation or even attempts, and then all of a sudden they get better. And I've heard that so many times from loved ones that they were getting better. All of a sudden they started interacting. They started talking to people and re-engaging and visiting people. And so those may also be potential warning signs. And when that happens, it's because the individual has made the decision to attempt suicide. And so you may see them giving away possessions, making sure that they're getting their affairs in order, talking and visiting to loved ones and making sure that they tell them that they love them. Those kind of things that kind of are out of character for them are also some of the warning signs that we especially need to pay attention to, that we don't always know that that is a sign.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. This is World Suicide Prevention Day. We are trying to peel back the many layers of this complicated issue in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. If you have a question, or if you have a comment, if you need to perhaps talk to someone, or if you are concerned about a loved one and you want to share your story with us, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Okay, Dr. Hubbard, I was sitting here listening to you, and the more you shared with us, the more complex my thoughts were, the more complex this issue seems to be, because if someone is if someone is down, and I'm speaking in layman's terms, you have a loved one who is down, you may suspect that they are depressed, and then, you know, they're better, should you, you know, assume that they may be, you know, in the midst of making a decision about taking their own life? If they're trying to get their affairs in order, is that something that you could consider? If this person is normally a giving person and they continue to be that way, is that something that you should consider? What if the person is just ill and has decided not to tell the family or friends about it? You know, how do you approach that really, gosh, bumpy conversation with someone? Because it may not be a suicide ideation. It could be something else.
Right, absolutely, which is one of the reasons that we need to make sure that we're educating ourselves across the board about the signs and symptoms of mental illness. You made a great point about an individual that may already be, they may just be a giving person. So I'm talking, when I talk about the warning signs that someone may be contemplating suicide, it's those individuals that are out of character, or something seems off for them in terms of giving away personal possessions. These are personal possessions that are important to them, those things that are really important to them that they normally wouldn't give away. So even that giving person that you know, freely gives, those are the kind of things that you want to pay attention to. If somebody's a little sad, a little down, it doesn't mean necessarily that they're contemplating suicide, but paying attention to if they continue to get worse. So when we see it happening in depression, they may start off a little sad, then it gets worse, hygiene starts to go, they're not sleeping, or all they're doing is sleeping. Those are symptoms of depression, and so they may be what we refer to as down spiraling. The biggest thing, the most important thing is to ask the question. People often think that if they ask someone if they're thinking about suicide, that they're putting the ideal in their head. Trust me, you're not. If they're contemplating taking their life, it's already, the thought is already there, and you may actually save a life by asking if they're thinking about that. And during the conversation, you want to make sure that you stay calm, that you're not accusatory. A lot of times, individuals are mistaken for lazy or unmotivated if they're depressed. You want to make sure that you acknowledge their feelings and not discount them in terms of telling them that they just need to get over it or move on. Just continue to offer support and encouragement. And if it's a loved one, reassuring them that they're loved and that you're there to help them with whatever they need to get through whatever they're dealing with.
I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is World Suicide Prevention Day. If you need help or know someone who may, please join the conversation. Also, if you need resources, 1-800-273-TALK for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline Network. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM, Channel 141. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on SiriusXM, Channel 141. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum in the Insight segment on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is World Suicide Prevention Month or Prevention Day, and we are attempting to address this delicate issue of suicide and mental health. My guests are Dr. Paulette Hubbard, licensed clinical social worker, and Dr. Kelechi Fluitt, director of outreach for Howard University's Counseling Service and a licensed psychology associate. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Rick, calling from Baltimore. Rick, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Rick, are you there?
Yes.
Yes, go right ahead, please.
Well, doctor alluded on the fact of, signs. I was trying to tell people that I was having problems, and they said, oh, no, it's nothing wrong with you. You're okay. But I just took it upon myself to seek help, and I'm a lot better now. I'm getting better, and I'm currently on a 100-milligram sertraline, and I would just encourage people to listen if someone says that. And that's all.
Well, first of all, I want to salute you, Rick, first for sharing your challenges on this program and for being brave and seeking help and kind of, turning your sights inside to make sure that you want to continue to stay with us and to move forward. And I can't imagine just how encouraging that can be to people who may be struggling with the same kind of issues. Your thoughts, Dr. Fluitt?
I echo the sentiment of being transparent, of sharing with us your struggles. I think it's essential to really use his point as an example, right? So if you have people in your life that you truly care about and they're expressing concerns of harm, of self-harm to you, really just being in the space where we can, to his point, listen. Everyone needs a listening ear. So just really being there for them, listening, not arguing, not threatening, not raising your voice, not having a debate about if this is right or wrong, because in that moment, that person is being vulnerable and saying, I am struggling. Something is happening with me and to me, and I need help. And so really just taking in what they're saying. Don't downplay it. Don't make, you'll be just fine. Don't brush it off. But really just being in that space with them and exhibiting empathy. I think the world needs a lot more of that, right? So just to be empathetic and just to be present is what's going to be essential to have that much-needed conversation.
And, Dr. Hubbard, the thing with Rick, I would say he definitely would be a role model for, for others who are you know, struggling. It really, you really have to be brave to face the stigma, and to make a decision that you are going to be healthy, mentally healthy.
Yes, and bravo to you for seeking services, even when you didn't. It sounds like you didn't have the support present, but it's also one of the things that I just mentioned in terms of understanding what's going on and understanding the signs and symptoms of mental illness, and when you're not able, when this is just a phase or something that, you know, you're sad about something, as opposed to there's a significant health problem going on that you need additional assistance for.
Yeah.
Rick, go ahead. Sure.
One thing was that I had a question for the doctor, because I am seeing my primary physician and a therapist, but now, how do I, because I'm going to discuss this with the psychotherapist, but I need to let them know that I was really having problems, because it's been 4 months, and they don't know.
You're breaking up.
Yeah, you said that you were really what now?
How do I tell family members and friends that I'm going through it now, because, you know, they didn't listen at first.
Oh, my goodness. That is such an important question.
I want to, you know, besides going to them and showing them Sertraline or Zoloft prescription, how can I, you know, get them to listen now?
Harold, he's breaking up again.
He was saying, how does he tell his family now that he is on the road to better mental health? Mm-hmm. How does he share this with them?
The question is, in some family, you may not be able to share this with. The question is, where are you in terms of progress in your treatment? Or if you are rejected, how will that impact you, or will that have an impact? And I think that's something that it's very important that you discuss with your therapist in terms of when you should share that information, so that she or he can help you assess if you're in a place where, if you are rejected, that it won't cause a setback for you. And then being selective about who you tell, who do you trust, who will actually step up for you and provide that support for you as you go through this process of healing.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily, I don't always advise clients to announce it to the entire family, because you're not going to always get the support that you need, and it could actually cause a setback. So who do you trust, or who can you trust to share this with, and you knowing, based on their previous history, that they will be supportive in helping you and being supportive and not, again, dismissing you and dismissing the issue as something that you just need to get over.
Okay, because I don't want it to be I told you so, or something like coming out. I just don't want that. I want what you were saying, support.
And so tell me this, what's the need to tell who the family members that you want to tell? What's the need to tell them? How is that going to serve you?
Because I'm not around them that much. You know, I just sunk into depression where I was just staying in the house. The thoughts of the suicide was there. I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress syndrome and depression, and I'm just keeping to myself right now.
He's breaking up again.
He says that, you know, he said that he wasn't around them very much, and that he was just staying in the house. And I'll have to kind of let this be the last comment before we open the lines back up for other callers who may need some assistance. But I would argue maybe he, you know, maybe Rick, you feel obligated to at least share with some important members or an important member of your family, and maybe that may that may go, you know, far to his healing. But Dr. Hubbard, real quick, a final thought for Rick, please.
Again, I would encourage you to have this conversation with your therapist, because she has a better view of what your issues are and how your family may be actually influencing some of the difficulties that you're experiencing, and how they may cause you to down spiral. So I would encourage you to speak with your therapist about who to share with, and then how to go about sharing the information.
Well, Rick, thank you so much again for sharing with us. We salute you. We honor you, and we hope that you continue on the upswing as far as your mental health journey. Rick, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Fluid, on the tail end of this conversation that we just had with Rick, obviously, you know, he is a mature adult. But when you're talking about young people, not all parents are as open-minded and forward-thinking as young people would hope that they are. And as a parent, I know, and you as a new parent, so get ready. You know, but you know, there are, your kids don't tell you everything. You know, whether it's they decide to skip school, or you know, try some illicit substance, or if they're having suicide ideations. You know, how do you? What advice would you give to a parent from the perspective of a young person if they suspect that something is amiss?
I think the first step really is to have the conversation with them, right? And so people who care about you and love you and are attentive to what's happening with you, like a parent or a present parent, will kind of notice a shift in their child. Right. So they may notice that they may be utilizing substances, even though the child is not telling them that they are. They may notice some changes in their mood. They may notice that they're doing some things that may be considered more reckless or impulsive.
Could be puberty.
It could be puberty. Right. So life is all about transition. So some of that is really also trying to get to know who they are. But then some of it is more, it's less having a better understanding about me, and more, no, this is a problem. This is something that I need to be mindful of, right? So I think being present, listening, and having the conversation, a lot of times your child may not share it with you, but they may share it with a friend that's close to them. And so really having those lines of communication open with the people that your kids connect with, their social media pages. The goal is not to, you know, to get on there and police them as much as it is just to pay attention to what it is potentially that they're writing or that they're putting on, you know. And so just really being present about that is going to be essential. So for me, it's really being present, being attentive, noticing those shifts in behaviors, those shifts in mood, that those recklessness that's happening, and then also just really also take a note when trauma happens, right? And so trauma could occur with the death of a loved one, really checking in with your child. If someone that is significant to them passes away, checking in with them. How are you doing with this? Do you think maybe you can benefit from talking to someone that's other than me that can be helpful? Transitions, if they have issues or concerns within their own space, and they're disappointed, and it feels less like, oh, this is just right now. It feels more long-term than providing them with avenues to speak to someone about what's happening for them.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's talk to Cherie calling from D.C. Cherie, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was calling because back in the end of July, I had a neighbor who committed suicide on his job, something that happened at the job, and he shot himself on the job. So it was on the news, and I didn't find out until the day of his service, which was about 2 weeks after. You know, I kept saying, I haven't seen his car, something's wrong. And I have a son that's 11 and my daughter's 24, and he was a great neighbor, always out in the neighborhood. And so it was kind of devastating and very unexpected. And what's the best way to support them as well as support my neighbors? Because it was so tragic. And I was very candid with my son about what happened. But he says, because we used to see him every day, he'll say, I miss him, or, why would he shoot himself? He was great. So what's the best way to support him and also support my neighbors?
Dr. Hubbard, I'll let you start with this, and then, Dr. Fluitt, you're certainly welcome to chime in.
Okay. I have a bad connection. She was breaking up. I heard part of it that something happened to the neighbor.
Yes.
And you're, okay.
And she's trying to help her son move through this process. Cherie, how old is your son?
24.
How old is he?
My son is 11.
He's 11 years old. Was he close to your neighbor?
Yes. This is someone that, literally, we have a small community, so every day when we come home, he would be exercising on the corner. So literally every day, even for myself, when I come home and turn that corner and don't see him there, it's very hard. It's just heartbreaking because it was so sudden. And because of COVID and everything, we couldn't even grieve properly, because I found out the day of his service what had happened. I just noticed he had been missing for a couple weeks. And I kept saying, something's not right. I haven't seen him. That's not like him. And then I found out the day of his service from another neighbor, and the services were held in New York. So no one from the community was even able to travel to New York for the services. So it's a big difference. My neighbors don't come outside anymore. They'll be outside in the evening. And so I just wanted to know, one, how can I help my son? Because he does mention it every, a couple times a week. He'll say, I miss him. Those sort of things. And like I said, none of his friends, my neighbor's friends, come outside anymore. The guys will always come outside and sit and talk and just kind of,
Okay.
it was a close community. So
okay. Let me see what Dr. Hubbard has to say. How do you counsel an 11-year-old when a beloved neighbor takes their own life?
Allowing them, I applaud you for being attentive enough to recognize that there is an issue going on. Allowing him to talk about it, encouraging him to come to you and have those conversations, and even cry about it. A lot of times we attempt to suppress our emotions and not allow the emotions that they're feeling to be expressed. So encouraging him to do that. With an 11-year-old, there's several different things that you can have him draw pictures. You can have him talk about what he loved or liked about the individual. But keeping the dialogue going is the most important thing. And then being supportive and letting your son know that it's okay for him to feel the way that he feels, and understanding that it's a process that he's going through. And if he, usually after a month or so, if you don't start to see any improvement, I would recommend that you take him to talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Fluitt?
Well, I'm always very mindful that death is the equalizer, right? And so oftentimes when we talk about suicide, there is this need to kind of pinpoint who the suicide looked like. So as it relates to, it's important to note that it impacts people regardless of race, gender, creed, socioeconomic status, disability, class. But really, it's essential to really just remind for her son, to allow him to process whatever's happening for him. So if it's sadness around him not being there, then sitting with him in that sadness. If it's maybe he wants to talk about the good times when he would see him, allowing him to process that. I thought it was a great idea what Dr. Hubbard brought into the space about drawing or writing out one's feelings. Journaling is really essential. And then overall, if we find that it's continual, right, because he just experienced a loss. He didn't know him for one day, so naturally he's not going to be able to process his death in one day. It's going to take time. And so if you find that, you know what, I think it could be beneficial for him to speak to someone, then there are clinical psychologists as well as clinical mental health practitioners who work with children, who are able to efficiently work with children, where he can be in an individual setting and have that space to talk about his feelings. And even you talked a little bit about your community. So even like the neighborhood not feeling well, and it's really just really important for people to have a space to process and to grieve. And I think that's one of the things that COVID robs us, is the opportunity to grieve because of all of this, you know, the stipulations around travel and just the virus itself. So just really being in a space where encouraging them to seek services, encouraging them to talk to someone. Maybe you all can honor him in some way, honor his life in some way, a balloon release or planting a tree. There are ways in which we can celebrate the experience that we had with the person, even though we are mourning the loss of the person.
Cherie, thank you so much for sharing with us. We appreciate your phone call. You know, one of the things that I've noticed of late, and for anyone who has, you know, visited their family practitioner, is that in addition to all of the other information, insurance and driver's license and everything, shoe size and hat size and everything else they ask you for, one of the things that you may notice is that you're getting this, a mental health sheet, a checkoff sheet that is asking about how you're feeling, whether it's, you think that you've been down, have you been drinking more, if you drink at all, illicit substances, suicide ideations, you know, and the like. And it's one thing to be in the safe space of a doctor's office and to fill out the sheet, and it's really kind of, you know, formal and yes or no. But if I were, you know, feeling a little down, but not having any suicide ideations, Dr. Hubbard, and one of my friends asks me if I've had any thoughts of hurting myself, I'd get mad.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you deal? You know, how do you approach that kind of thing, even if you notice a change, you know, with a friend or a loved one? And because if, you know, I may get mad, I may get angry, but on another day, if you ask me, I might say, well, you know, thank you for caring about me. I'm good. Mm-hmm. But you can't read mine.
Mm-hmm, exactly. You can't read minds. And so it goes back to knowing and understanding those warning signs. And one of the other warning signs that I didn't mention earlier was an increase in drug and or alcohol use. And so your question is, how do you decide? It's knowing those warning signs.
How do you approach someone where you suspect that this may be an issue?
Then you approach them in a calm, reassuring tone. And it's important that you be able to point out some of the behaviors that may be an indication that led you to that decision, especially if they get upset. If they get upset, then know some of the signs so that you can say, well, I was concerned because you were giving away some of your most prized possessions, and I was concerned because you are, I see you getting worse in terms of you're not engaging with anyone or you're sleeping. All you do is sleep all day. So I was just concerned in that it may be leading to a point of you thinking about suicide and pointing out, again, that may diminish some of the anger or some of the angst that someone may have in terms of if you ask that question. But I can't stress enough that you need to ask that question. If you're seeing signs that someone may be contemplating and those signs that we listed earlier, ask.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dr. Fluid, one of the other things, and this is kind of how we started this conversation, because we are in in really difficult times as a result of the pandemic, and there really isn't any end in sight. This isn't someone just perhaps feeling depressed because they've lost their lost a job where they may have skills or other resources, and down the road there may be another job, or someone who has gone through a bad breakup or a divorce, but there could be light at the end of the tunnel. But when you're talking about the pandemic, no one has any idea how long the shutdown is going to last, how long we will be isolated from each other. I haven't hugged my child since March. Okay. I haven't hugged my mother or my father or my stepmother since March. And we are now in August. And I come from a touchy-feely family, from the youngest to the oldest. That's what we do. And, outside of, the difficult issues of suicide ideation, just that feeling of loss can be so debilitating. How, Dr. Fluitt, do you counsel someone who may already have some risk factors as it relates to suicide, and now we're in the middle of a pandemic?
I think that's a great question, because it feels often, based on what we are, that there's no end in sight, similar to what you mentioned. I think one of the first things to do is really communicate that suicide is not the answer, that there is still hope. One of the things that I say is that we're in the business of celebrating birthdays, right? And the best way to celebrate it is with you here. And also thinking about the fact that suicide is a national mental health crisis. It impacts not only the individual who transitions, but according to research, up to 135 people just by sheer impact. So people have talked about neighbors passing away. Naturally, these people have families. They may have kids. They have spouses. They have parents. They have generations that they are connected to, right? So it's not just this person is gone and that is that person. It's the sheer impact that it has on the generations and on the family, both internal and external, right, family members. So I think one of the things is really just to let people know that there is, although it feels often like there's not, but there is light at the end of the tunnel. And often we find with people who have attempted suicide, attempted suicide in the past but did not complete suicide, that they will share that they were able to see that light once time passed, right? So whatever it is they were experiencing in that moment that made them feel like they could not do anything but take their life, once they attempted and they were not successful and time went on, they realized that issue was not as big as it felt in that moment. So really, and encouraging people that they don't have to even attempt, but just realizing that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. It may feel dim. It may not feel as bright as it used to be, but really holding on to that hope that things can get better. And not only just the hope, but taking action to connect with services so that somebody can walk you through this journey, right? And be there with you and hold your hand, whether or not they're doing it virtually through telemental health, or whether or not they're accepting clients in their office using CDC protocols and this social distancing, et cetera. So I cannot emphasize that it's not the answer. There is still hope, and that it's really going to be essential for us to connect with services and for us to have these tough conversations by saying, similar to what the other Dr. Hubbard has shared on this conversation, I'm noticing some changes in you. I'm noticing this, being able to list them out, being able to call them out. And I am concerned about you. I love you enough to say that I'm concerned about you. And I want to know, do you plan on harming yourself? Do you plan on killing yourself? Because because we love you, we care about you, and we can get you the support that you need. So really having honest dialogue and checking in with people. I know that we can't physically see people, but we can check in on people and let them know that there is still light, there's still hope, and there is support.
I think that's a great.
Can I add
real quick? You got 15 seconds, Doc. Go ahead.
Okay. I want to ask, in terms of instilling hope, there's a couple of different things that they can do. One is a gratitude list. What are you grateful for? And why are you grateful for that? The other thing, when you talk about instilling hope, have that person, if they're struggling, find that one thing, just one thing. They don't have to find a whole thing, but one thing that to live for.
Okay.
You know, instead of, you know, a lot of times you hear, oh, it'll get better. Okay, how will it get better? How have them draw from a previous time that they were feeling like this or they were experiencing sadness, and how did it get better? It will also help to instill that hope for them to hold on until they can get to a place where they do feel better.
Dr. Paulette Hubbard, Dr. Kelechi Fluitt, thank you both for participating in this really important conversation. We appreciate your time. That is the Daily Drum on this Thursday, September 10th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.